Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBEAR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at thewolf.com, kbear102.com, or wccy.com. Today, my guest in this segment is Kevin Weir from Dial Help. Kevin, if you could, just give us a little background on how the organization started.
The organization started in the early 70s as a substance abuse prevention center, and it was Dial Drug at the time, and they opened their first hotline at that point. And shortly after that, they started offering prevention services, and then we just continued to grow and add services depending on what the community needed.
And specifically in this community, what's been the reaction that you've been getting from people that come in to Dial Help?
Well, the reaction we get is pretty diverse. A lot of people need some place safe to talk about their issues and their problems, mm-hmm. and that's probably the most important thing we do is we assess for their safety. We always do that. So we are part of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline and also part of the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, the RAIN organization. And we give an opportunity for those that don't have any money or have low money, low income, to get some services that would not necessarily be able to afford other places.
And, I mean, in your humble opinion, how do you feel the success has been within this community?
We have a lot of support for the services that we offer at Dial Help. We are supported in a large part by private donations. We also have some grant funding as well.
Do you feel like there are some services that you would like to improve, or maybe some things about Dial Help that you would like to improve in the future?
Well, in any nonprofit organization, you never have enough funds to do as many things as you want to do. We'd love to offer more services. We already offer school-based services, but if we had more funds, we could offer more school-based services. We could offer more sliding scale counseling. So there's a lot of different organizations in the community that help kind of fill that gap as well. We're also an information and referral center. So even if someone doesn't know where to start, they can give us a call, and we have a large database of all the different organizations and what service they provide, so we can kind of help maximize all of our community's resources.
I guess you can go in now into one of your huge initiatives, okay, which is the Men Matter. Tell us a little bit about it.
Men Matter is, it comes out of our sexual violence prevention services. It is a male leadership initiative that we've initiated to reach men, engage men in the effort to end violence in general, and to foster healthy masculinity towards that effort.
What kind of things do you incorporate into this kind of program?
Well, right now, Men Matter is still fairly new. We kicked it off with a beard and healthy masculinity contest last fall, mm-hmm. Where men entered, and the contest was based 50% on their beard, you know, the size, the shape, the styling, and everything. And the other 50% was based on essays they wrote about, or video clips that they submitted, about what does healthy masculinity mean to them. So we kind of introduced the topic there. Now, we ask ourselves, well, why is this important at all? You know, we're all healthy men, right? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of healthy men, and most of us are non-violent. But we do have an epidemic of men's violence in our country, in the world, in fact. Most violent crime is perpetrated by men. Most murders are committed by men. Almost all domestic violence serious domestic violence, mm-hmm. is committed by men. Most mass shootings are done by males. 80% of suicides are perpetrated by men, so we're more likely to die by suicide. We're less likely to go to the doctor and get preventative care. So this culture of unhealthy masculinity kind of supports a lot of this violence. And it's our job to kind of dig down and see what that is. And I just want to stress that this is a long conversation.
Yeah.
So we're just starting this conversation today. We're not going to get all the way through it. And if there are men listening, I just want to let you know that this can be a really difficult topic to talk about if you're not already accustomed to talking about it. We all belong to groups, but as men, and especially as white men up here in the UP, we're not accustomed to thinking of ourselves as part of a group.
Mm-hmm.
We're just used to being normal guys who try to behave and go out and just live life.
When do you think this all started? This whole these notions and this stuff that's coming out in the media and stuff. When do you think it started?
I don't know. I think if you look throughout history, I think it's pretty well known that men are more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a function of your mental state? Is that a function of personality? Is it a function of biology? Is it a function of how we're socialized? And I'm sure that there are factors that play into all of that. But what we're focusing on is how we are socialized as men and how we do have privileges over women and how that can manifest itself into an entitlement attitude.
Yeah.
You know, these are all loaded mm-hmm. words that are scary, and a lot of us have some pretty strong reactions to these words. And even though most men are not violent, all men have privilege.
True. Are there any techniques that you guys use to try to get some people who just really have a hard time opening up? Are there any ways that you would encourage? Like, how do you get somebody to open up?
How do you get somebody to open up? Well, ultimately, that's their choice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I found that when I first started working on the crisis line at Dial Help, I thought that would be a hard skill to get people to open up. Now, that's a self-selecting group that calls, but I found that people are often willing to talk if they know somebody's really listening and is really curious.
Is it okay, now you do take the calls, mm-hmm. and you do have people who come in personally?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it must be better to come in person, right?
I think it depends on who you are. I know I would prefer talking to somebody in person, but there are sometimes obstacles. Some people are anxious talking face-to-face. Maybe they want to maintain that anonymity, so they'll call us or they'll text us instead. Sometimes it might be dangerous for somebody to come in if they have an intimate partner who is jealous and stalking them. It might be very dangerous for them to reach out for help.
Do you have a percentage of how many people call and how many come in personally?
It would probably be most people call.
Most people call,
and
yeah.
And then I'd say texting is the next most popular option. And then IM and walk-in is probably the least amount. Unfortunately, our front door is right on Sheldon Avenue. And that can be a deterrent sometimes to people.
And I have heard about the texting option. Mm-hmm. When did that idea come up? Because that seems like a really, really great idea.
We've been doing texting, and this, don't hold me to this, but I want to say maybe 2 years now. Most young people text.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. They don't pick up the phone and call anymore. I even text a lot now. I didn't used to, but I have. And it has its pros and its cons. There's only so much you can say in like 140 characters
mm-hmm.
until you have to do another 140 characters.
And has that opened up the door to maybe the younger generation?
It definitely has. I don't know what the increase is, but I do know there's been a notable increase since we started texting as far as how many youth that we reach.
Excellent. You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest Kevin Weir from Dial Help. Go into the Men Matter promise. What kind of steps are taken to translate this message to people who are just perpetually violent?
Right. The Men Matter promise is a list of values and principles that we put together at Men Matter that we think are a roadmap forward for men who are already healthy to commit to this promise and to their community that they're going to live up to these ideals and these promises. And also it's a roadmap for men who maybe aren't quite there yet,
yeah.
maybe don't know what a healthy masculinity looks like, to sign on to this promise as well. We'd love to reach 1,000 men. We've just started this promise. You can sign on right online at www.men-matter.org to see the promise in its entirety, and you can just sign it right online too. And there's no commitment to it. It's an honor-bound pledge
mm-hmm.
to yourself, to your community, and to your family members that this is the kind of man that you're going to be.
And where who came up with these? I mean, you don't have to name them specifically, mm-hmm. but where did these ideals come from?
We looked at a lot of other healthy masculinity programs and kind of picked ones that we thought were appropriate for our area.
And were they have to be approved by any kind of
They're not approved by anybody, any governing body other than Men Matter.
And, I mean, what have you heard from some people? Is this working?
It's working as far as we've had a number of men sign on to it. And most of those men can look at this card, and I'm guessing you can probably look at this card. Any healthy man can look at it and say, I already do this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not used to kind of sticking our necks out and standing up for other people all the time. So to sign this is kind of a weird feeling. But it does talk a lot about committing to nonviolence, committing to consensual sex only, towards equitable treatment of women. And then the big one for us guys is gaining some equality in domestic tasks and child raising. I think we have gotten better at this as men over time, but I think most of us, if we're honest, we still have a long way to go in that capacity.
I guess, I mean, we can get into the lot of mass shootings, a lot of mm-hmm. violence that has been going on. It seems unbelievable. I mean, I read somewhere a correspondent on ABC News saying that since the year 2000, mass shootings have tripled in this mm-hmm. country, which is, it's so unfortunate. And I mean, just last week you had the shooting at UC Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. the Sandy Hook, the theater in Colorado. From what you've been able to gather, why do you think these mass shootings have become so common?
And to speak to that, I'm not qualified to speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say, though, is that 1/5 of the country suffers from some type of mental illness. Okay, guns are accessible to all of us. We all more or less consume the same media. Yet, there is a gender difference. Because there, I think we're in about the mid-60s now on mass shootings since 1982, mm-hmm. and all but one are men. So while we may not have that answer, there's a question there begging to be answered.
It's right there, yeah.
What is it about young men? Some of it might have to do with entitlement attitudes that are born out of male privilege. And we all have some degree of male privilege, and if people aren't familiar with that, that is advantages that are bestowed on us at birth just by being born as men. So just by being born as men, I'm going to be viewed as a more idealistic representation of our culture. And being born as a white man, this gives me tremendous advantage right out the gate. Okay, so as a result of that, we tend to be entitled. We feel entitled to public spaces. Sometimes we feel entitled to women's bodies. And we feel entitled maybe to governance. Now, most of us don't take that any farther mm-hmm. than just a day-to-day bias. But something's happening. Some people are taking that much further, and they're resorting to violence and anger when life doesn't live up to those expectations of that entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be a component. Now, we're not going to rule out mental health issues.
Oh, yeah, it could be several factors, yeah.
It's likely a mix of things. But we have to ask ourselves, why aren't women who are mentally ill taking out their frustrations in the same way as young men are?
Very true.
Or
I didn't even think about that. That's a very good point. The concept of male privilege, mm-hmm. like you say, it seems like when you're born,
right.
you seem to have this kind of sense of almost entitlement. Is there any way that that could be, I mean, lessened through community members, through society, maybe through family, or is that something that just sticks?
No, that's a tough one. It's a $1 million question, right? And that's what Men Matter is doing. We're providing a forum for a conversation that's going to take a long time to figure out how we can do that. I mean, it does start at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we can be role models for our sons of how they're supposed to treat people in the world. We're also role models for our daughters of how they should expect to be treated in the world. Equality, right? That's what we're after, is that everyone's treated the same and viewed as the same when they walk into a building. And how do we do that? I mean, that is a $1 million question that people way smarter than I have been working on for decades and decades.
And you had mentioned to me earlier about how the violence is being reframed through, like you said, mental illness and all these kinds of things. Can you go a little bit in depth about that?
Well, sure. If you watch the news, we'll talk about violence, but we don't talk about violent men.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a woman who has committed some type of atrocity and drives her children into the water in a van, you've seen stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
We make a big deal out of their gender. And if there was any other group, any other label we could put on another group that was responsible for 90% or in some cases 95% of violence out there, we would be talking about that. If it was a different ethnic group, we would label it. If it was a different religious group, we would label it unfairly, but we would do it. But we don't do that with men, and that's what privilege really is. It's that we don't even have to identify ourselves as part of a group that might be problematic.
Yeah, it's almost, would you say, a gender bias?
I think so.
It clearly mm-hmm. looks like it, because it seems like when males commit acts like this, it would have to take something like a mass shooting,
right,
for it to be, you know, on the news. And I mean, do you feel like the news is responsible for some of this gender bias?
I think we're all responsible for the gender bias. I think we would probably all, if we're part of a privileged group, we're blind to that part.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't even see it, so we don't even mention it. So you will see people on TV, pundits and experts, talking about how this is mental illness or this is a gun rights issue, or any other number of issues, video games, media, single parents. But the strongest correlation is gender there, though. That is the strongest correlation. It doesn't mean it's a cause, but there's something there. And we got to start talking about what it is.
Do you think maybe it's just almost too obvious? Maybe, because the correlation is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, do you think it's one of those things where it's right under their nose?
Maybe, right? And maybe it's part of our expectations, too. Maybe we don't have expectations that are high enough on our men. Because I can control myself. I'm not violent towards other people, so I know men can do it. But maybe we need to raise those expectations and make that clear.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest Kevin Weir from Dial Help. Like you said before, not a lot of men are violent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some men who come to Dial Help, whether it be via phone, in person, like you said, in text, and they come and talk. What do you do in cases of the men who just don't want to come, don't want to get help, don't want to get involved, but they remain violent? How do you get involved in situations like that?
Part of our other services at Dial Help is we do offer a batterers intervention program. We offer anger management. They're very two different groups.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about perpetrators now who have been maybe convicted, then you need the court involved to mandate that people go to treatment and explore some of these ideas. It's not easy. How do you help somebody who doesn't want to help?
Exactly.
And of course, as men, we're sometimes socialized that we don't ask for help. We'd be weak if we ask for help. And that, I think that is damaging to us, especially when you look at the number of men who die by suicide. I can't help but wonder if those obstacles get in the way, where they don't feel like they're allowed to ask for help, or would feel weak if they reached out for help. And I want them to know, reach out for help.
Now, I know you do provide a service in this community, but do you feel like in general, the nation, do you feel like that there is enough help out there, or is there a strong enough effort to get help for violent men?
I don't think so. I don't even think that we've quite gotten to the stage of acknowledgement on this issue. And as healthy men, I think the challenge for us is to say, we are not part of this problem. But we are part of this problem because we're part of a system where we have entitlement. And that word, again, can be really confusing for us as men to think, well, what do I have
mm-hmm.
that's entitlement here? And I was a stay-at-home dad for a long time, which comes with its own pros and cons, and that's, I think, difficult for a lot of men to be a stay-at-home dad, to switch into a role that's different. And I remember I would take my little guys to the library, and without fail, at least one woman would come up to me and tell me how great a dad I was and how it was so awesome I was doing this. They would never do that to any woman that came into the library with her kids. And that's because it was an option for me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It was an option for me where it was mandatory for them. That's what they're supposed to do. But if a man takes care of his kids, that's optional. So somehow I'm better than. And a lot of times we find ourselves in that situation where we're viewed as better than without even having to try. And that's kind of that nuance of privilege.
It's almost like you're supposed to, take after mm-hmm. your kids. It's not something that we should be rewarded for.
Right.
And, you would like to think that, it has transitioned. It seems like in the last 60, 70 years, we've transitioned into that. Do you see us continuing to be a little bit more open about what we do and try to, blur the lines a little bit of masculinity?
I think there's definitely been progress. I think there's a lot more progress that needs to be made than we as men would be willing to admit.
What kind of progress?
Well, I know at my house, things are not necessarily equal in the domestic task area. I know I do more than I've done before. I've done more than I think that my family of origin did. But it's not there. We know in government it's not even close. I think only 18% of Congress
is women. Almost full-blown, where you can clearly see that there is imbalance.
Right. And then in pay equity, we know that's a problem. We know that's still 70 cents on the dollar for women doing the same work. We know CEOs, I think women are about 5% of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. So we have that whole piece, which is harder to see that whole linkage to domestic and sexual violence. And we talk about the shootings, and that's a big deal. The shootings are a big deal. They're terrorism.
Yes.
They're men's terrorism, if we really wanted to put a blunt label on it. But most of the violence that goes on day to day is domestic violence and sexual violence against women. And that's not as glamorous, and I hate to use that word, but it's not as glamorous to cover on a day-to-day basis. And it's stuff that happens behind closed doors, and it's stuff that we probably enable as men by perpetuating that privilege. And then that privilege turns into entitlement, and then when things don't go our way, some men react violently. I know it's overly simplistic. Everything we're talking about today is overly simplistic. Right now, you're just asking for my opinion on things, which doesn't carry that much weight, to be honest with you. But I think it's a little bit of both. We work really hard not to point out every time that this is a man. But if this was another ethnic group that was responsible for this much violence, I feel pretty confident saying that we would point that out pretty starkly.
And in terms of advice, what kind of advice do you give to the violent men on a regular basis, just some kind of things that you've just recently have encountered?
Keep an open mind. Try to be empathetic. Really try to get in the other person's shoes and think about how you would really feel if you were treated this way, if you were treated the way you were treating somebody else.
And do you get any of the wives or girlfriends or anything? Is there any way for them to help? Are there any services that you offer?
We offer comprehensive services to victims of any crime, including sexual assault. We have a victim service unit that will respond 24/7 to any type of victimization. We offer free counseling for victims. The Barbara Kettle Gunlock Shelter also offers shelter services, counseling services for anyone who is a victim of domestic violence. They are an excellent resource as well. So we do have a lot of victim related services in our community, and the more that people know about that, the better.
In closing, what other programs do you see in the future, initiatives or any kind of stuff do you see in the future of Dial Help?
Well, we'd like to really build Men Matter into becoming more of an action-based organization to get more men engaged that are actually willing to become involved. And some of that work is just going to have to grow organically out of this organization. The more men that commit to the Men Matter promise, the more men that we have out there who aren't afraid to stand up for some of these principles and some of these values that I think are fairly mainstream to start with.
Excellent. And I guess that's going to wrap things up. I'd like to thank my guest, Kevin Weir, for stopping by to talk about a subject that clearly, you know, some people might have a hard time talking about, but we appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at thewolf.com, kbear102.com, or wccy.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Copper Country Today.